listen, let's take a break from saving the world for a bit, right?
So with you there.
And just sell some fun.
Culture is always going to be the most important factor. It's the thing that cultivates the work. The most important people at an agency are the people that make other people want to come into work and do their best.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's culture.
And I'm just noticing that we are stepping into like a templatized way of working. And I found that we just had the same kind of thing coming up over and over again. I think we're all a little bit afraid to do something different.
That's what makes it so exciting, what we do, because it changes, right? I mean, yeah. A couple of years ago, stuff was winning just for using AI, and now it almost doesn't because of that.
Yeah.
One of the most underrated qualities of creative people is their taste. AI can't replace taste.
This is Talking in Creative Circles, the official podcast of The Creative Circle, the voice of South Africa's advertising industry, in partnership with Kagiso Media Radio.
Welcome to Talking in Creative Circles, the official podcast of The Creative Circle South Africa. I'm Fran Lucken, CCO at VML South Africa, and I'm your guest host for this episode. So in this episode, we're talking about Ad New Year, the 5 minutes between when all the award shows finish and when they start again, and we crawl towards the finish line for 2025. We're going to be looking back on the year and thinking about how creatives tackle that blank sheet of paper for new ideas after the last lure has been handed out and before the next awards show deadline opens. Joining me are two fabulous guests, Jackie Mullaney, ECD at FCB Africa. Hello.
Hi.
And Saf Sindhi, one of the founders of new agency Bananas. Hi, Saf.
Hi, everybody.
How lovely to have you. Thanks for spending time with us today.
Thanks for having us.
So 2025, we're in the last fumes of it. The tank is empty and we're running on the fumes. So how's your year in advertising been personally, Jackie?
Sure. I mean, I'm just feeling like everybody's been sitting in neutral at this point. We've been grappling, and I suppose it's post-COVID. It still feels like it was yesterday. We're trying to like still get our stuff together. And I think from like a client and an agency point of view, we've been in neutral just waiting for that gear shift. And I think this was the year that we started gearing up. And I don't know if it was all that successful. Maybe we hit third gear, but it was our first start, and we've got a little bit of a rolling start. And it's been tough. It's been tough.
There's been a massive cultural shift, I think, since COVID. Certainly in my experience in the big agencies, a massive cultural shift, less sort of trust in institutions, I think, and less, people are less inclined. They don't want to come to the office as much as they possibly did. And that's been difficult to get a culture going again in the agency, right?
Yeah. I mean, we're telling people to come to the office and they're going, but why? We've got this kind of thing. But when you're in the office, then there's a different vibe. So we're having to rewrite everything. And that doesn't take a year. It takes time.
And we'll get to this later, but you know, we've got AI looming. Well, it's with us, which is going to cause even more shifts, but we will get to that later. Saf, I'd love to hear from you as the head of an independent. What's that feeling like for you? Are you having the same challenges?
Yeah, I think we have the same challenges in terms of the short lead times, the small budgets, the difficulties in getting work out there. But I must say there's a lot of questions always around the industry about what it's like starting an independent. And it feels like there's two ways of answering that question. The one is you can start an independent, and fortunately for us, we've started an independent with a very great client, and that makes all the world of difference. I'm sure a lot of the listeners would have already seen Suhail Limbada's message on Creative Circle after Cannes, and he lives and he breathes that. And that's made a massive difference for us, because we share the same, just not just creative values, but human values, which makes it a pleasure to wake up and go to work for KFC Thailand every day.
Yeah, and I mean, it was quite a big start because you won big, right? Gold at Cannes, and then, you know, the wins at Lurie's, the golds at Lurie's as well. So it's a hell of a debut.
Well done.
Yeah, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
It was really epic. I mean, is it crazy to launch a new shop in this economy? Are you actually insane?
Yeah, I think.
Yes.
I mean, come on.
I'm going to say yes.
Safe place.
Yes.
We are pretty insane, but I suppose that's why we all here, right? I think, you know, and I'm sorry, it's unfortunate that it's an Elon Musk quote.
You get one, no more.
Yeah. I only get one. Yes, I'm sorry, but it was such a truth for me, especially with launching Bananas with Justin. He said that a friend of his in Silicon Valley described being an entrepreneur as chewing glass and staring into the abyss. And it does feel like that, because at any given time, a pandemic could strike, a recession, a client could change their minds, and then you go back to being maybe a freelance copywriter, which isn't a bad gig. I'd still love to do that. So yeah, it is. It's very scary, but there's an upside to it, and there's great opportunities for indies because you get to skip all the bullshit. You know, I get to get on a phone with my CMO and tell him the idea that I wrote without having to go through a CD, an ECD, a CCO, and then a global CCO, and then a regional, and all of that. So it does make the process a lot easier and a lot quicker. And that's really fruitful. There's also the fact that you don't have any overheads. So we get to pick and choose the clients we want to work with. I don't need to win a piece of business I don't want to work with or work for, because I don't have any costs to cover.
And I guess the culture piece is different, right? Because you're founders. You know, the culture piece is different because you're all in it. You're not necessarily trying to coax people to come back to an office, or because you're all in it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we work remotely on different sides of the world. There's four of us at the agency at the moment. Chantal's in Joburg, Justin's in Noordhoek, Sean Harrison is somewhere in Cape Town, and I'm in Bangkok most of the time when I'm not in Joburg. So it's really taken true to the modern way of working, which is remote and which is flexible and easy.
Yeah. I guess that, you know, being in it, having skin in the game is what keeps the culture, even though you are remote, right? I'm just speculating.
No, completely. I think, you know, cultures, whether you're working at a conglomerate, like a WPP or an Omnicom or an independent, culture is always going to be the most important factor. It's the thing that cultivates the work. I remember Brent Singer used to always say to me at Network BBDO that the most important people at an agency are the people that make other people want to come into work and do their best.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's culture.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Jackie, I want to talk to you a little bit about awards. Yeah, because like I said, it's the 5 minutes between the last awards show and the beginning of the next season. And we're all kind of hyperventilating slightly. But, you know, what was your judging experience this year? What stood out as fresh and innovative? What kind of work do you think we need to do more of? And what kind of work is a little bit over now?
That's a great question, because, I mean, I judge digital and the crafts and integrated. And I'm just noticing that we are stepping into like a templatized way of working. We know what's working and we kind of go, oh, that's what's working. Let's do that. And I found that we just had the same kind of thing coming up over and over again. And what shone was the pieces that took us by surprise. I called it the Jenny Glover effect.
Oh, yeah.
Because remember when Jenny Glover, she came up with that monologue, that inner monologue radio ad that, oh, it was brilliant. And then everybody tapped into it and it was
And
just,
no one could do it quite like Jenny. No, that is the thing.
Exactly. But we all tried to, because we were like, we all wanted that. It was brilliant. Oh, yeah. And I find that we get ourselves to a spot where, oh, that's working.
Mm.
So how do we make our idea work in that kind of spot? And I think we're all a little bit afraid to do something different, because like Sav said, we've got minimal budgets, we've got to do a lot with a little. And I think those are the pieces that kind of shone for me this year, was the pieces that weren't doing what everyone else was doing. And don't get me wrong, there were some amazing pieces, but when you find yourself doing the same thing, you're going to have to go, okay, I've got five pieces all saying the same thing. I need to take one that did the best in that one and then move on. And I think that's something we need to think about. Like, how do we get back to original and brave, and not necessarily brave, but like authentic?
Yeah, it's hard because, you know, typically we come back from award shows and we've all taken notes.
Yeah.
And we've tried to analyze, you know, what won. And then the temptation is to use that as the starting point.
Yeah.
So, Saf, is there another approach, you know, reflecting on your judging experience, What did you take out of that, you know, to go back to the agency and go, right, this is what we're going to look at for next year?
I think for me, and Fran, you were in the room with me during judging, especially in film. And I think there were maybe one or two really standout pieces that you'd look at and you'd be like, okay, cool, that's international, global standard of work, which we all want to try and get to. And then there's a lot of pieces that mirror stories we've seen before, mirror culture. And I'm personally not a fan of mirroring culture. I think that's a lack of freshness, because you're taking something that you see and you're reflecting it back on your consumers, on society. I love to see work that really, reshapes a trend or doesn't tag along to something, but changes the direction of something and takes the consumers with them. So I look for work that really fucks with culture in a way, twists it, breaks it, makes you rethink a trend. And there wasn't a lot of that for me. I think a lot of the stories that I saw, I'd seen before. I've read them in a Bible, or I've seen them on a movie or in a TV series. And it was the same story just retold through the lens of the brand and the brand tone without much of a backflip and a roundhouse kick to the face. It was like, whoa, where did that come from? And I think we need to start getting back there. And I don't know how we inspire creatives to start doing that, but it's something that's, I think, that we're really lacking at the moment, especially in South Africa.
I think we tend to follow, right? We sort of go, what's doing well? And a little bit, you know, to try and do that.
I mean, there's so many, you know, just outside of film, there's every second case study that I've been judging, not just at Lurie's, but even around the world, starts with we hijacked this, or we used AI too, or we made an app that did that. And it's like, no, you didn't.
It's existing.
You really made, yeah. We made another case study with sad piano music, and let's switch it off and move on and be original and think originally. And there's a fear to it because you don't know what's going to happen at the end of the line, but that's the beauty of creativity. You might make a pile of shit, but I can try.
Yeah.
But something, I suppose on that note, something that caused a lot of discussion in the digital jury room, especially in craft, AI, we're going like, okay, so where does craft come in? Because there was discussion of like, okay, well, a prompt, is that considered craft? And like someone like me, who's maybe a bit of a purist, I have an art direction background and I have a copywriting background, but I started copy in early 2000s for digital, and that was hard work. And now I look at a prompt, I'm like, I'm not going to give that craft. That's not craft for me. But it was a good discussion to have, to go, is this where digital is going? Is AI craft? Is it taking away from what we're doing? Is it adding, or is it taking away from actually hands getting dirty and getting ourselves into our art space again?
And that's an interesting, because that for me is part of the value of award shows, right? It's where you get to negotiate benchmarks and you get to have and you know, probably what happened in that case is the agency entered it absolutely everywhere.
Yeah.
Right. So the discussion you were having was not as a result of possibly that they actually thought that that was craft. It's just that we know the shotgun approach. But what was interesting was that you had the discussion.
Exactly. And it was almost like, do we evolve our categories at Lurie's to evolve with the technology? Or do we go and hold fast and go, actually, the craft in what we do is in us, in human beings? Like, what do we consider craft? And that's it's a bigger discussion of what we consider craft when it comes to digital.
Yeah.
And we can be purists, or we can be like, do we evolve? And what is the criteria around that?
And I think that's what makes it so exciting, what we do, because it changes, right? I mean, a couple of years ago, stuff was winning just for using AI, and now it almost doesn't because of that.
Yeah.
There's a default cynicism now. It's like, yeah, I mean, we all know you had to use it, but just like we no longer say, hey, we used Photoshop.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you don't get prizes for using Photoshop anymore, because, you know, I think it's almost going to that point of view.
Exactly.
Saf, if you were, what are you thinking about focusing on for next year? Like, we've all now got a blank slate in front of us. Literally, the day you get back from an awards show is the day you have to start working for the next one. How are you thinking about what your strategy is for next year?
It's always a difficult one because one show starts in Feb.
Well, I mean, I think the entries are open now.
Like, we're working now, Saf. Get ready now. Let's
exactly.
do it.
I had like a trauma response when I saw the mail. I was like, I'm not working.
Yeah. I know. So really, even before Cairns over, you're already thinking about next year. And if you're only starting to think about it now, then you're already too late, unfortunately.
Because it takes so much time to make some of these pieces, right? Yeah.
It takes so much time. And I think what's important again is to, like, especially in this day and age, it's staying on top of trends and staying on top of what's fresh and remembering that come award season next year, those trends are long gone and they are going to sound haggard as all hell, because we've seen so much of them at Ad of the Month and on Ad Week and on Ad Age and at Best Ads on TV. So it's really less about a strategy and more just about answering a brief in the moment that brief arrives and trying to, I mean, we really wake up in the morning and go, hey, we need to make a piece of work that's going to win an award. We wake up in the morning and we go, we need to make a piece of work that's going to resonate now and drive people to go and eat some fried chicken or drink some beer or whatever the case may be, you know. So there isn't much of a strategy behind awards on our side. It's more about what happens in the moment and what's hot in the moment, and that's how we end up riding those waves. And when the time comes to write those case studies, we just got to make sure we write it as fresh as the next agency can write theirs.
Yeah. Jackie, how do you motivate your teams? You know, we come back from Lurie's, and I think a lot of the South African agencies didn't have a fabulous year this year at Lurie's, or at Cannes. Mm. How do you motivate the creatives to go? I mean, and I had to face that myself, you know, getting back and sending out the mail going, well, you know, not this year, but next year. You know, how do you motivate your teams to, let's go one more time, pick up that blank piece of paper?
It's hard. I don't really have the answer for that. But I mean, you know, we're doing this for a reason. And I always say to my team, we could be doing something completely different. We could be sitting at our desk doing a very random desk job, being bored. But we're here because we're a bunch of fucking weirdos. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. And that's cool because we found our group of weirdos. And I keep reminding them to kind of just keep your eye out. It's not about looking for culture and staying on top of culture and whatever. It's going in your day-to-day life. What bothers you? What are you picking up? What are you seeing? Yeah. Because those things that are bothering you or you want to solve, I can tell you there's going to be other people. So pick that up, write it down, put it somewhere that everyone else can see, and let's see how we can solve that problem, because that's what we do. We solve problems. But it's like we do this, and I always say, like, my biggest motto in the day, and I tell my son every day he goes to school, I'm like, you find the fun.
Yeah.
Whatever we do, find the fun, because if you cannot find the fun, you're not doing the right thing.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's so interesting for me, one of my encouragements is every day we have more briefs actually than we almost know how to handle.
Yeah.
And we're not sitting there at our desks waiting for work. And every one of those briefs is an opportunity. And sometimes you just stumble on something. Some of my most successful pieces have been things where I didn't think it was going to, you know, it almost took me by surprise.
Yeah.
Where you go, wow, I didn't think that was going to turn out like that. I didn't think that was going to, you know, we had the piece for Vaseline, the Heritage Day ad, and it sort of just happened. And it was one of those things where you go, wow, I didn't, you know, I've agonized so much over so many pieces of work. I didn't agonize over that one. The creatives wanted to do it. I signed off the cost. The client said, go make it.
Yeah.
Basically. And it just sort of this magic happened. And that was a lesson for me in, you know what, you can't control all of this. All you can do is, like, the brief that's in front of you, you try and do the best you can, and every now and again magic happens, you know.
But that's the thing, like, and I'll tell you a personal story. I landed up in hospital. I had an asthma attack. I didn't know I had asthma. I landed up in a hospital bed.
Oh wow.
And I had this professor of psychiatry coming to me and going, you're having an asthma attack. And he said to me, you have to find a new profession.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, I've been doing this for 18 years. What do you want me to do? Like, and he was like, but I see so many people in advertising with this issue and you're stressed and whatever. And I took away from that we put a lot of pressure on ourselves because we're coming up with something out of nothing. And that's why I keep reminding myself, but we do this for fun.
Yeah.
It has to be fun because it's entertainment. We're selling entertainment. If you're not having fun, how do you expect anyone else to enjoy what you are making? And I think we forget that.
There's so many people out there. If you look at all the content creators, all the people on TikTok, all the people on, there's so many people out there having fun.
Yeah.
And people are consuming their content. And I mean, you've got people like Kevin Hart starting his own agency, Ryan Reynolds. They're coming for our lunch and those guys are having fun.
That's the thing.
You know, they are making the kind of content everyone wants to watch because it's just fun and it's funny.
There's just
and
so much shit happening in the world. And I think it's our job to kind of go, hey, I know we're selling things and we're doing a job, but actually just remind people that there's a little bit of happiness and there's joy.
So would your new resolution for your agency would be find the fun, right?
Absolutely. It's like, listen, let's take a break from saving the world for a bit, right?
So with you there.
And just sell some fun. And because we have to sell. That's our bread and our livelihood. We're going to sell. But fucking find the fun. Let's do that.
That sounds good. Saf, what would your New Year's resolution for your agency be?
I mean, I think because we're going into just our second year, we do have a firm belief in mischief.
Oh, I love that.
You know, our mantra is mischief and meaning over money and metrics, which is something that we try to do. And I think advertising can be, it can suck the... Jackie, 100% right. It can suck the fun out of you because there is the metrics and the monies and the overheads and all of those things, you know. So to find the mischief and be able to walk into a boardroom with a piece of work that might scare the bejesus out of your client is a good thing. And it's something that we need to do more of. It's something that we used to do a lot of, if I remember correctly. There used to be a lot of mischief in advertising.
Too much mischief, if we're honest.
Maybe too much. But we want to bring that through, and if it comes through in your culture, as we were speaking about earlier, it will come through in your work.
Yeah. I mean, there is so much, I think, Jackie, you mentioned, there's so much that's somber out there, not the least of which is the rumblings and the predictions about AI. And I want to get there. It's kind of the elephant in the room, but we can't avoid it. You know, every day. So Sam Altman has said 95% of ad agency jobs will be done by AI, for example. You know, you've got holding companies actually publishing figures about how many jobs they could potentially, you know, eliminate, how much margin they could save with AI. We get bombarded with it. I mean, there was a lot of talk about it at Cannes. It's everywhere. Is it just a hype cycle? And we all need to just get on with our lives and tune it out. How do you deal with all the noise around it, Saf?
Oh, Fran, if I can be honest, even before AI started, it felt like a lot of the writing and advertising was written by AI. And I think...
And that was written by humans.
I think a long time ago, what happened to us was we forgot that we look at creators and we hire creators and we bring them onto our brands or into our agencies because they have taste. And one of the most underrated qualities of creative people is their taste. AI can't replace taste. It's either you've got it or you don't. And I think for that reason, AI is a tool just like any other that you can use, but you're still going to need that person who has good taste in the work that knows what's the right human truth that's going to lead into an idea that you can create madness around that human truth with. And so unsubscribing from the whole AI conversation, it is a hype. It's going to change the world, obviously. But as long as there's a human element to it, and for me, that human element is always going to be good fucking taste in the work, then we'll all be fine if we have that.
Yeah.
So, like, I think we always look at it from an advertising point of view. We go, oh, is AI going to steal our jobs and whatever? But I'd like to switch that view and go, the people we're talking to, they're not blind to the fact that AI is everywhere. And there was a stat, I the other day. I think it was like 90% of content on social was AI generated.
Yeah.
So people are becoming very aware of it. And that with that comes skepticism. So if we're going to be authentic, I think we need to go, and exactly what Saf says, like AI is a tool. It can make our jobs easier with the stuff that we need to get out quickly.
Yeah.
If we use it as a tool. But nothing can take away from the fact that we are human beings with human insights. We need to hold on to that, because at the end of the day, people are going to be looking at the content and going, is this AI? And they're going to become very skeptical. And I think we need to be prepared for that backlash.
Yeah. I don't want to be a Luddite or anything, but what concerns me is that so much of it is being driven by the interests of big money. So these kind of tech bros, like wanting to conquer the world. And you know, there's a lot of people in agency land going, yay, AI, it's going to be amazing. We're embracing it. And I go, are we a bunch of turkeys looking forward to Christmas?
Yeah.
You know, or like
lining up.
Yeah. Like, I mean, are you mad? And it worries me. I mean, there doesn't seem to be any motive behind the fervor behind AI other than, I think, you know, profit and world dominance. And those two things are probably not the best reasons to adopt something. And so I'm concerned. I think it's a powerful tool and we could probably do incredible things with it. But I worry that the speed of adoption or the speed at which we're all being encouraged to adopt it, or we're being pressurized to adopt it by a lot of our clients, is the motivation is all about saving costs. And I think you could go through a hell of a downside before you discover that that wasn't a great idea.
I mean, when I studied, it was 22 years ago, I had to literally paint my font book in gouache.
Mm.
I had to learn how like kerning and leading worked. And that was how I had to think. And I'm going like, yeah, AI, there's a place for it. Don't get me wrong. There's absolutely a place. But craft, we've lost craft. And us getting back into that is what I believe is critical to what we do. We don't just come up and have like fun and play with things. Everything comes from something and there's a craft in it. And we need to hold on to that.
Yeah. I'd like to be allowed to play with this thing and adopt it, you know, as we find use for it, rather than just being pressurized into it.
Exactly.
By market forces that want to save money, I think.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's why I think for independence, Saf, I don't know. This is my conclusion from looking from the outside in. It could be a very powerful tool for independence, right? Because you can actually generate much more work without hiring people, and you can do more. As you build up, obviously, you would bring in talent, but there's so much more you can actually do off a very, very small base of creative people.
No, completely. And I think as a startup, and we experienced this in the past year, we were able to do a lot more than we otherwise would have been because of AI. So it made Sean Harrison's job a lot easier to put 100 decks together in a week, rather than having like 20 art directors doing it with him. Otherwise, wouldn't have had the resources to fight on all the fronts that we had to fight on. And it did. It served its purpose, but it served its purpose to an extent because it obviously has its limitations. And the quality of the work and the thinking and ideation doesn't begin or end with AI. It's there in the middle to help you get to the other side.
Yeah, I got you over the line to an extent, from which point you could then take it and make the work richer, more beautiful, craft it more.
Completely.
Yeah. I mean, I remember talking to Christian from Sinister, and he's the, you know, obviously the VFX guru and a lot of us work with, and he was saying he's actually getting more work now because of AI. And what was interesting is he was saying he's making, so there's more projects being made. So, you know, previously you'd have a budget of 300K and then you wouldn't be able to make anything with it. But because of AI now, you're actually able to make stuff on lower budgets. And people like Christian are getting more work because he's an expert. He's able to execute with that tool to a degree of excellence and perfection that a lot of people can't reach, which I just thought was a fascinating anecdote.
Oh, it's true, and it buys you a lot of time. It gives you back that ideation time. a lot of directors that we work with use AI now to do up their storyboards, and that allows them to spend more time in research on their treatments rather than spending time reviewing and trying to get storyboards right, which benefits, it only benefits the work. It only pushes us further. And especially in today's day and age where we know how short our timelines are. So yes, it gives us the shortcut to fight those short timelines.
Yeah, I think I would say if we could just escape the hype cycle and thoughtfully adopt this as suits us, that would be ideal. You know, I'm excited about it, but I don't want to be forced into, you know, I want us to discover it for ourselves where it can help us.
Yeah, it should be a solutions-based tool, not a tool that we use to save money.
So, yeah, as we kind of come to the close, I hope you're both taking some time out at the end of this year. How do you recharge creatively, Saf? How do you refill the well? I mean, are you taking time off? As an agency founder, I'm hoping you get some time off. How do you recharge and refuel?
The truth is that I don't know. Our biggest client is a QSR, and you know what those can be like. But when I do get a chance to, I shut the fuck down. A lot of wildlife docus and a lot of stand-up comedy. And a lot of downtime just with myself and some loved ones. And that's it. And then back to the chaos.
Okay, Jackie, how do you unwind? What are you planning to do to refresh and refuel?
So I am taking a month off.
What?
No, much to my surprise.
That's a sabbatical.
Yeah. No, right?
It's been the most, guys. So, and I'm a true believer. Like I always tell everybody, if you don't have a work-life balance, you're useless to me.
I'm sure.
Because life inspires our work. So, yeah, I'm taking a month off. I love nature. So I'm going to be gardening. I'm going to go to places where I can watch people and understand how they think and what they do and just take that in. And, yeah, just as I go, I'm going to take notes. I have a little bit of a... what I call a life book that I carry with me, and anything that is random or odd or something I notice or somebody I'm looking at randomly, I write notes and I draw pictures and I just keep that book with me because I never know when it's going to spark something.
But that's lovely. It's like keeping the door open for the random and the serendipitous, right?
Because that's what we do. I mean, we're very much around like, yeah, watching people and what triggers them, what makes them happy.
Do you and Dell talk shop over the holidays, be honest?
Not over the holidays.
Being married to someone in the industry is probably...
So for context, Dell Maloney is my husband and he's a creative partner at Ogilvy. But we are very good at being each other's best friend. And our each other's creative directors, but we also are fierce competition, which keeps it interesting. I think it's also a good view of how, as South Africa, yes, we compete against each other, but as South Africans, we want each other to win. South Africa winning around the world is a win for us. It might not be me personally, but if South Africa can win, I'm happy. I'm like, I will do anything because it's South Africa. We've got the fucking best creatives and we need to push each other on. And that's what we need to do.
Yeah. And I think maybe, so it's so interesting because the Wall Street Journal published an article this week. And you may have seen it. The article was, "Welcome to Johannesburg. This is what it looks like when a city gives up." And the backlash, there's been so much positive information about Joburg now. So Joburg in your pocket is, you know, there's all sorts of people coming out and going, how dare you? This is how beautiful our city is. And there's all sorts of things happening. And I think we're like that. And I think that the slight downturn in international awards performance is possibly a good thing because we like to get in a corner, you know, and we like to come out punching. The minute someone criticizes us, it's just been so funny. The comments underneath the Wall Street Journal article are so funny. I mean, some of them miss the point. But we just came out swinging, man. Like all the Joburgers were, you know, I love that.
If we could quickly, I mean, we're remiss not to touch on Cairn and Geers. that happened there. Among, I think it was probably our biggest contingency of South Africans ever at Cairn this year. And it was my first time back with the South Africans after a few years in London, which was dreadfully depressing. And
London was dreadfully depressing, being with South Africans.
Just to clarify. But the chaos and the unity that we have as even just an industry as South Africans is something that I don't think as a creative or anyone in advertising you'd experience anywhere else in the world. We were all together all of the time and cheering each other on. And we didn't do that too well as a country, but when we did, we were backing each other wholeheartedly. And that was so beautiful to see. And may that long, long continue, because I think the South Americans do it in judging rooms. And we just do it out in the open.
That's something. But like, definitely. I mean, even in the Lurie's judging rooms, no one is ever wishing for your work not to win. You know, and it's hard because we're not judging our work. And you probably think like, oh, okay, you know, the judges are hoping for their own. We don't have a say in our own work. Like, we do not have a say. We are out of there. We're in the passageway. We're not allowed.
But we're not allowed
but
to vote
we,
for our
we
own
are
work, yeah.
all there
yeah.
pushing the best work. Any work that is good, we will push it. It's not a biased thing. We honestly are there to push the best work forward, because we know that when we come to international award shows, it's as much as we compete day to day on a South African soils, we're obviously going for the same clients, we're going for the same work, but we're a small agency. Everybody knows everybody. I mean, I've known you guys, Fran, Steph, I've known you guys for years.
Yeah.
But like, we're going to do our best for ourselves and our agencies, but actually we are such a special crowd, I'd like to think, because fuck, when it comes to international award shows, I'm like, damn, I want South Africa to win. So the best work needs to get there, and I will do whatever I can to make it seen. And that's awesome. And that's what we need to do.
Yeah, I think that we are moving more towards that. So I'm glad we got to here, because I really wanted to end on a positive note. And I think we've kind of already gone into that territory already. But Saf, what's giving you hope for South African creativity in 2026?
I hope that I don't sound biased because of bananas, but I love the rise of the indies. And not just the indie agencies, but also the consultancies. Amit Tilly's Number 10, Sohana's Love Song, Bazaar with Malou coming back from America. And you know, like, especially with Malou coming back from the States, and Dean Olschich said this a while back, I hope it inspires the long-awaited arrival of more of our talent that's overseas to come home and shine here. And
yeah.
And I think that's giving me high spirits. I spoke to Nkanyezi recently, and he said something very interesting. He said that his goal is to end the chicken wars. And I'd really love to see that.
What does that mean?
I suppose there's a perception. It's not a false perception around
chicken
the industry.
Chicken wins.
Over the last 10 years, it's been all chicken, right?
Oh.
And his goal, I think, is to kind of like break that cycle finally, which is really exciting. And it's going to pump new energy into our industry. So I'm looking forward to that.
I'm excited to see that.
No. And there's a lot of good young creatives, the guys from TBWA that won Young Lions at Cannes. It's such a hot team. So excited to see what they do next. So looking forward to it. I think the future could be bright. We just need to be smart about how we make sure it gets there.
Yeah. Okay, Jackie, what's giving you hope?
So I think the biggest output when I was looking at the Cannes wrap-up was humor. We want humor. And what do we do best?
Humor.
We fucking kill it. Humor. We want to laugh. The world wants to laugh. And let's do that. Like, let's bring it.
I think we don't take ourselves too seriously.
Exactly. So let's bring that into our work.
Yeah.
Let's bring that. And that's what I'm looking forward to next year.
That's great. I'm really encouraged by, you know, the work that Open Chair is doing with young women and just meeting all these incredible women. You know, I found so many times in my career that sometimes somebody just needs someone to believe in them.
Yeah.
Or to give them a little bit of attention and love. And then it's actually the spark that then ignites them. And I'm seeing it happen, you know, with the work at Open Chair, meeting these incredible young women, listening to their stories. And I'm so encouraged by the passion that there is out there, and the ambition and the incredibly capable, talented young women. And I think I can safely assume there's just as many incredibly talented young men as well. So I think there's a lot of great talent coming up, and I just think we need to. That's why I also love the rise of the independents, because I think those are spaces where I think younger talent can experiment and play and find their voice a little bit more. I think the pressures are different, and I think there's possibly more, less pressure on margin and more time to maybe mentor, and I think those places could be incredible incubators for young talent as well. I also love that a lot of young talent is just going straight to starting agencies or being consultants, or, you know, I love that. There isn't that old school career ladder thinking now, which I really love.
I think it's also important, like when we look at our market, 80% of them are female. They're buyers. Mm. So we need to represent. And I think there's so many women who are so damn talented that we need to put our hand down and lift them up.
I couldn't have said it better myself. Thank you so much. So a big thank you to my guests, Jackie Mullaney and Saf Cindy. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks, Fran. Always a pleasure.
Thank you for having us.
And I'm Fran Luckin. Don't forget to follow or subscribe to the Talking in Creative Circles podcast so you don't miss future episodes. We're on all the main podcast platforms as well as on jacarandafm.com under JackPod. See you next time.
Talking in Creative Circles is available wherever you get your podcasts.